You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you got beat off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Personally, I have a good friend. He's a Colts fan, so he's going to come over and we're going to watch together. But Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. And today we have to talk about the upcoming Colts game. We talked to Evan Sittery of Locked On Colts yesterday, got a decent, like, general sense of what was going on in Indianapolis, but today I kind of want to take a little bit of a deeper dive and really hone in on a couple things that I think are going to be important, and we also have a little bit of news to cover. So let's start with that. On Thursday, the Vikings placed right guard Pat Elflein on injured reserve. Now, in normal years, that would mean he would be out for at least 8 weeks, and this year, because of COVID-19, that limit is shortened. He could be out for a minimum of 3 weeks. He could be out for longer, but the minimum is only 3 weeks this year. It is likely that Drew Samia is going to be the starting right guard. It sounds like that's where the Vikings are leaning. However, there are some other options that are presentable to the Vikings. They have Brett Jones and Aviant Collins on their practice squad that could activate either one of those, or simply just game day activate them. The issue is, if you only want to game day activate them and you don't want to have to cut someone off of your 53-man roster, you are limited to doing that only twice. You can only do that for 2 weeks per player. So you could only, like, activate Brett Jones twice before, if you wanted to activate him for a third game, you have to put him on your 53-man roster, which probably means that somebody is going to get promoted to the 53-man roster in the stead of Pat Elflein. And since we're after week one, a lot of the guarantees and the vested veteran stuff doesn't apply anymore, so it's a little bit easier and more fluid to do that. My guess is that that's going to be Brett Jones, not because they want him to start at guard. I really don't think that they do. And it does sound like it's going to be Drew Samia, but I could be wrong. But more so because right now they don't have anybody else who has, like, any center experience. Dakota Dozier played one game at center in 2019. He played the week 17 game. He usually only played at the guard spots outside of that. So Dennison knows that he can play center, but I think they'd probably want, in the case that Bradbury goes down, somebody like Jones there that is a little bit more experienced at center. So that's who I think it would be. It could be Aviant Collins, and you could have him play one of the guard spots and move Dozier over to the other one. You could have like Collins play left guard and Dozier play right guard like he did in the past. There are a few other options that you could try, like Ezra Cleveland, though I think the Vikings really don't want to do that yet. They don't want to rush his development, which I think I agree with. So there's a few different options for how to replace Pat Elflein, but none of them feel very good. Like, all of those players I am extraordinarily worried about. Even Drew Samia, who I was super high on in the offseason, I thought he would take a step in camp and he would be able to take that starting job, and the fact that he didn't is kind of concerning to me. He's in his second year, and if he couldn't show that he was better than Pat Elflein playing a position that he didn't play for like 4 years before that and gave up 5 pressures in his first game, like, if Drew Samia couldn't beat that out, I'm like pretty concerned about that. But I think it gets to a sentiment that I hear a lot in Vikings fans that I kind of want to talk about. Well, it can't get any worse. And I talk about this all the time because it's one of my pet peeves. For one, I think it's hilarious that, like, Vikings fans of all people can fathom a world where we've hit rock bottom and the Vikings can't find a way to make it worse. Like, come on, I think we should have all known by now that they can find a way. But I also think that it assumes some things of the Vikings that are really difficult for me to buy into. For example, let's take the scenario where Drew Samia isn't worse than Pat Elflein, because, yeah, you're right, because Pat Elflein is as bad as it gets and is the rock bottom, and Drew Samia can't possibly be worse. If we take that as a given, there are some things that we have to believe. For one, we have to believe that the Vikings started Pat Elflein, who is worse, over Drew Samia. And a lot of people think that they, like, did so knowingly because of some weird, like, Mike Zimmer stubbornness. And he's, like, one of the least stubborn coaches in this regard. I think it really flies in the face of a lot of evidence. I mean, if you look at players who outplayed their competition in camp, like, situations where an undrafted free agent outplayed a draft pick or something, just about all those situations, unless it was, like, a third-round draft pick and it totally wouldn't make sense to expose that guy to waivers, most of those situations, the better player makes it regardless of their pedigree. You know, Eric Wilson beating out, like, Elijah Lee, you know, guys like Chad Beebe beating out Dylan Mitchell. There are a lot of cases of players, you know, even stuff like Laquon Treadwell not starting because he wasn't ready to start, like Charles Johnson playing more than Laquon Treadwell. I mean, shoot, we just had one last week with Cameron Dantzler playing over Jeff Gladney. So I think to convince me that the Vikings are one of those teams that, like, sticks to their guys and, like, won't admit that they're wrong, I think the roster would look a lot different if that were the case. Like, the evidence just doesn't really support that. And with Elflein and Samia, it would also require you to believe that for whatever reason, the Vikings are like Pat Elflein is their guy and Drew Samia is like some black sheep or whatever. Or people like have that with like Brett Jones, like, oh, why do they hate Brett Jones so much? It's like, you know, they like acquired both players. Like they had signaled that they are high on both players. And if both player and like if one player is bad and the other is good, like they have to make that choice. Like they have to acquire a player and then bench one of them. That doesn't necessarily mean that like they're like sticking to one stubbornly. The more likely scenario is that Pat Elflein is better at playing guard than Drew Samia. And that does not look very good on Drew Samia, which is why I'm very concerned. The other possible scenario, if you wanted a super silver lining, I think one that I am like that I find like way more plausible is that the Vikings do think that Elflein is better than Samia, but are wrong. And they've been wrong about offensive line before. They've been wrong about the capability for position switches to work out. They've been wrong about roster decisions. They've been wrong about acquisition and evaluation and self-scouting. They've been kind of notoriously bad at self-scouting their offensive line. It's one of the biggest causes for the offensive line being a problem for so much time. So maybe we backdoor our way into better guard play because the Vikings were accidentally wrong about Drew Samia and Pat Elflein, but like even that isn't like particularly encouraging because then the Vikings were wrong about offensive line and there's no real reason to believe that they won't continue to be wrong about offensive line in the future. Elflein was also pretty good in run blocking on Sunday against the Packers, which is something that he could hang his hat on. He gave up 5 pressures. That's really, really bad, but he was better in run blocking and now you are like at risk of losing that. So this is a concern. This is not addition by subtraction. The cliche and the principle of all of this that I want you to take is the starter that is struggling is not going to be fixed by replacing him with the guy who couldn't beat him in camp. And while I don't think it's like implausible that the Vikings are wrong about offensive line again, it's definitely not the betting favorite, especially headed up against DeForest Buckner, who did not have his best game against Jacksonville, but still presents quite a threat. I'm like really worried about the guard situation and what the Vikings end up having to do to replace Pat Elflein for at least the next 3 weeks. So coming up, we're going to talk about the Colts. We're going to talk about kind of the way that they tried to attack week one and what we can glean from that and kind of how we can use that to like mimic our own preparation. We'll like kind of pretend we're the Vikings preparing for the Colts and see how we approach that. And then, of course, we got bold predictions from you guys. We're going to do that every week. I'm going to revisit last week's bold predictions, see if anybody got anywhere and laugh at the people who were really, really wrong, myself included. But don't be discouraged because this is all like in good fun. I don't expect anybody to be right at all. And then, of course, we have a new round of bold predictions that I have queued up here this week. But first, Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities. Whether they're our corner stores or coffee spots or favorite shops, local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders. They call us by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile to support us and our community. And right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So now it's time for us to return the favor. So next time you go shopping, make the right choice to shop at local businesses. And look for the contactless symbol to tap and pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. Okay, so when I looked at the Colts and I just kind of scrubbed through all of their tape for their week one game and kind of what happened to them against Jacksonville, because they were favored pretty heavily in that game and Jacksonville came out with the upset. And one of the things that really stuck out to me, we talked about it with Evan yesterday, so you should go listen to that too for a more general thing, because I'm going to kind of hone in on like this and a couple of things that like really I noticed about the Colts. And the more like general sense for the Colts as an opponent, I got that from Evan yesterday, so go listen to that. But what really stuck out to me was 17 running back passes, 17 completions for like 150 yards or something like that, and a touchdown. That's significant. That comprised like a major portion of their offense. That wasn't just a couple of checkdowns or a couple of quick screens. It seemed like they came in with a plan to utilize screens like a lot, and swing passes and flat passes and stuff, and lots of throws to the running back. So I actually went in and I just kind of charted what each one of them was and who it went to. Obviously, the stuff to Marlon Mack isn't like especially relevant now because he's hurt. He's not going to play. He tore his Achilles. Hope he gets better. The two other guys are Jonathan Taylor, the rookie, and Nyheim Hines, who's kind of been around the league but is kind of finding his place here. And Nyheim Hines is definitely the more interesting one. Jonathan Taylor was used a lot more like a traditional like zone running back, and that worked out fine for them. And what a traditional running back does, I mean, this is kind of a thunder and lightning duo, right? And the thunder is Jonathan Taylor, and he's not the thunder that a guy like, you know, Jerome Bettis was back in the day or anything like that, but he kind of fulfills that role of the more like traditional bell cow guy. And he took a lot of like check downy type plays. But a lot of these running back plays were not checkdowns. They didn't look, to me at least, like plays that didn't work out and then Phillip Rivers went to the running back. There were a few, and Rivers processes the field unbelievably fast. It's always been one of his strengths, is like reading the field really quickly. And so he gets to the checkdown really quickly when he realizes that like the coverage has whatever he has beat, and he can kind of make that decision quickly. But then it kind of turns into like a flat route or like a leak out into the flat or like a swing. But what really stuck out to me was a lot of screens. They ran two screens to Jonathan Taylor, they ran one to Marlon Mack, and they ran two to Nyheim Hines. That's a lot of screens in a game, and I found that particularly surprising from a team like the Colts that has made quite a bit of investment into their wide receivers, like Paris Campbell, Michael Pittman Jr., and of course T.Y. Hilton, and a ton of investment into their offensive line. They've got Quentin Nelson, they got a second round pick at tackle. Like, they have, Glowinski, they've got one of the better left tackles. Like, they have a huge investment in their offensive line and their wide receivers, and a screen is what you do when you don't have faith in those two groups. That's what you do when you need to protect a bad offensive line. That's the Vikings had a ton of success with screens when their offensive line was poor, because it meant that their offensive linemen didn't have to block for as long, or in some cases they didn't have to block at all. They'd do a lookout block, which is the kind that, you know, they almost like kind of push the defensive lineman further upfield toward the quarterback, because you want them to be too far upfield like on a screen, right? That gets them to like run themselves out of the play, and it's easier on the linemen. And of course, you know, you're asking for a lot less from your wide receivers on a screen play. It's not something that requires them to like beat anybody in coverage. And so using screen plays and a lot of other sort of, there's like wide receiver screen types, there's swing passes with a wide receiver, just, you know, one wide receiver out blocking. I wouldn't call that a screen, even though it kind of follows the same principles. But a lot of this was throw behind the line of scrimmage and hope your running backs get yards after the catch. The thing is, the Vikings match up really, really well against that. And again, with Jonathan Taylor, when Jonathan Taylor's on the field, he kind of played a much more traditional role where he would go out and be the check down. And sometimes there was like a swing pass to him or whatever. But most of that stuff went to Nyheim Hines. And the way that they used Nyheim Hines was a lot more interesting. It still had lots of screens and stuff, but they had him run actual routes. These were plays that seemed designed to be running back passes. So that's like, he's the guy that you actually have to like put a man on and cover. And he would run like a circle, like an H-back circle, like where you start in the backfield and you kind of circle your way around the line. Or he would actually, when they would come out and empty, he would line up wide sometimes, or like line up as a slot receiver and just like run regular like wide receiver routes and be treated like a wide receiver. So Nyheim Hines, when he's in the huddle, that's where they, I think, like to use a little bit more of their creative stuff. So if I'm the Vikings and I'm preparing for them, that's kind of what I'm installing. And I'm saying, you know, hey, when Nyheim Hines is out there, I'm telling Eric Kendricks, I'm telling Anthony Barr, look out for the weird stuff, because this is going to be where the alignments get strange. When Jonathan Taylor's out there, I can expect it to be a little bit more traditional and just say, all right, do your assignments and don't mess it up. That is, I guess, the tell that I got from, how the Colts behaved when Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines were on the field. But Philip Rivers seemed to really, really be favoring that check down. And he seemed to be, I mean, he was dumping off passes in clean pockets for plays that had not developed yet. And either he's reading the field very fast and he's realizing that when the play develops, it's not going to be there because the coverage counters whatever they have called or whatever, which I would find very strange, because if he knew that pre-snap, he would probably have the leeway to change that play. And if he didn't know it pre-snap but learned it, you know, by the top of his drop back, that's almost like superhuman. So what I kind of think is that he's just like playing a little scared and dumping off to the running back in situations where it looks like it's going to work out fine, but you know, somebody can come up and make a tackle, and it's not always going to work out well, because you know, you're not always going to get the running back to force a missed tackle, especially not, you know, with Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines. That's not Dalvin Cook, right? And as good as Philip Rivers was at completing passes in that game, he had a really high completion percentage, it seemed like there was a lot of meat left on the bone with the way that Philip Rivers tried to attack the Jaguars. And I think if he tries to do that against the Vikings are going to be able to tackle a little bit more soundly than they did against Green Bay. It's going to put a lot of the game in the hands of Eric Kendricks, which is exactly what you want. You want the game to be in the hands of one of your best defenders versus, you know, putting the game in the hands of like Holton Hill. And I think it's going to kind of like limit the thing the Colts have. Like, if I were a Colts fan, I'd be pretty upset about this. I don't like the way that Philip Rivers play. I mean, I like it because the Vikings are about to play him, but I really don't think it's want to be that effective. Elsewhere in the skill positions of the Colts offense, I'm focusing on the Colts offense because, let's be honest, how the Vikings defense does this week is going to be the thing we're all focusing the most on. I wrote a piece at Zone Coverage that I'll link in the show notes, and I'll just explain it real quick. But basically, I looked at the Jaguars corners, and they have a group that's very similar to ours, and not in a great way. They have a third-year undrafted free agent. They've got a rookie that's starting in his first couple of games here, and they have a slot corner who is like okay, but kind of underachieving for what you hoped you would have from them. That describes both the Jaguars and the Vikings cornerbacks, and the Jaguars cornerbacks were able to keep things in check. Again, they didn't do like great. The Colts did produce a reasonable amount and they scored a reasonable amount of points, but it was a far cry from what we saw in Minnesota, with everybody giving up like 7 or 8 catches for, you know, 81, 87 yards. I think Holton Hill gave up over 100 yards. That doesn't seem like the Colts are capable. And it seemed like the Jaguars corners and the Vikings corners put out about the same amount, like the same quality of play. And they seem to be a reasonable proxy for what happens when corners of this quality go up against the Colts, and what the Colts were able to do with that opportunity. If I were a Colts fan, I would be kind of disappointed in, and it makes me feel like this game won't come down to the corners, which is what I want. I don't want the game to come down to the corners. I think more games than I wish are going to come down to the corners, but this doesn't really feel like one of them. This seems like it's going to be a game that comes down to tackling the flats, stopping zone runs, and kind of the nitty-gritty of linebacker assignments and run fits and stuff that I think the Vikings are pretty sound at with all the veteran stuff they've gotten there. They don't have a lot of young players in that interior. Even the players that I'm worried about, like Shamar Stephen and Jahleel Johnson, are veteran enough where they're not going to be making like rookie dumb mistakes. They might get beat more often than I wish, but the game is going to come down to something that I think everybody who needs to be comfortable with is comfortable with. So it makes me kind of bullish on the Vikings. I actually put a little bit of money on the Vikings +3. I thought that line was too generous to the Vikings, and I'm going to try to make a little bit of money on it. Now, I could not have done any of that research or any of that segment without NFL Game Pass. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays and get all of the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. And you can also get the coach's film so that you can do your own research. Check what I'm saying. See if it's wrong. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. And NFL Game Pass is the only place you can replay every game all season long. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes. Go inside the game from a player's perspective as they break down the game's concepts and techniques, and you can learn from the best like Adam Thielen, Eric Kendricks, Dalvin Cook, and many more. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films archive, so go to nfl.com/gamepass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. So to wrap up the show, let's talk about some spicy predictions. I'm going to quick go over what we did last week. In short, nobody got any right, which I think is the way it should be. I don't think anybody should be right here. But we're going to go through them here and see how close people got. So the first one came from Stizo. He said KJ Osborne would get a special teams touchdown. He looked good as a returner. Didn't get a touchdown, but I feel like you were in the ballpark. Gabriel Greco said 16 plus sacks the whole game. That was awesome and funny. We didn't quite get there, though. What if Rodgers didn't get sacked, and I think Cousins only had like two, the safety and the really bad one, right? Vikings After Dark said Armin Watts would get two sacks. No sacks at all, so we were wrong there. Matt Blassig said BC Johnson, come out game, 100 yards receiving, and I kind of jumped on that bandwagon too. I said he would lead the whole game. He would lead every receiver in receiving yards. Yeah, sorry, Matt, we didn't get there, huh? My favorite one comes from Ben Anderson, who quote tweeted himself. He cold taked himself too, so I hope you're all right with this. But he said that he thought the Packers would be kept to the lowest score that we've ever held them to in the Zimmer era with them playing Rodgers. So like excluding the Brett Hundley shutout from 2017, which was 13 points. That we couldn't have been more wrong. We did set a Zimmer record, but it wasn't the fun kind. So that one did not get there. And one that I didn't read, but that was pretty close and worth shouting out was Martin PE, who said Kirk rushes for 40 and a TD, and he was scrambling around a lot. You had a shot there, but let's go to the Colts ones. These are always more fun. We'll start with it. It's funny because all of the bold predictions that I got for the Packers game were really optimistic, and they were all like pro Vikings ones. They were, you know, Thielen will have a good game, the Dancer will get a lot of picks and all this stuff. And this one, there's a whole lot of like pro Colts, like good things for the Colts. Like this first one that says Xavier Rhodes will get 4 interceptions. There was a ton of versions of this, of Xavier Rhodes, you know, having like a lot of interceptions, doing really well against Thielen. 4 interceptions is hilarious. That I love that. Yes, get spicy. I'd give this to you if Rhodes got like 2 or 3, because 4 is just ridiculous. I don't even know if that's ever happened. Somebody point to me a game where somebody got 4 interceptions. I want to see it. I guess as Vikings fans, we love to fantasize about the single thing that could hurt the most, which is the Vikings losing this game and losing it at the hands of a guy that they let get away. Luke EVT says Rhodes shadows Thielen and holds him to less than 20 yards. I like this for 2 reasons. It's kind of a duplicate with the Nathan Miller one, but I included it because Rhodes shadows Thielen. He was the only guy that said like Rhodes shadows Thielen as part of the prediction. Everybody else says like Rhodes clamps down on Thielen. The Colts played sides against Jacksonville. They didn't have Rhodes shadow like DJ Chark or whoever they thought the best Jaguars receiver was. He played on the right side and he just stayed on the right side. So I don't know if they're going to have anybody shadow. And if they did, are we sure it's going to be Rhodes, or do they like, you know, Rock Ya-Sin, the other guy over there? Evan said that they kind of want Rhodes to be the veteran, like cornerback one. So I probably would say that if somebody shadows, it would be Rhodes. But like that is bold in and of itself that they would actually use Rhodes to shadow. It doesn't seem like the Colts see him that way. And holding him to less than 20 yards would be astounding, right? Less than 20 is like not a lot at all. Like that's 2 catches for 15 or something dumb like that. That's completely shutting him down. So that would be a hell of a call if Luke EBT got that. Ben Alvib said Jefferson has a better game than Randy's rookie Thanksgiving game. I love that. I love just referencing that rookie Thanksgiving game because that game is kind of weird. Of course, you know, 3 yards for 163 and 3 touchdowns. That's the baseline that the prediction is predicated on. But Randy was targeted 8 times in that game. There were 5 incompletions to Randy Moss. He just got the 3 that he got, he housed, which is unbelievable and amazing. It's why it's historic. But I always think that game is funny because it seems like the offense for the most part was elsewhere, and Randy Moss in that game had 3 very big plays and absolutely nothing else. It's one of the weirder stat lines I've ever seen. But I mean, it's legendary for great reason. So if Jefferson outdoes that, yeah, you get your call. Skull Brother says Dantzler and Gladney combined for 3 picks. I love the boldness of assuming Dantzler will play. He was on the injury report on Thursday. He was a DNP with the same rib injury. Does not look great for his chances to play at all. But if Gladney gets 3 on his own, this still technically cashes. So I'll give it to you. But 3 picks from those guys would be pretty intense. Big Tony says Vikings get a touchdown from all 3 phases. That is awesome. I love that. It's like so general that, but it requires so many crazy things to happen. An offensive one, you need a defensive touchdown, like some weird fumble rooski, and you also need a special teams touchdown. So we've got somebody buying into KJ Osborne again. This is going to happen one of these days, guys. We have Tom Check, who says Dan Bailey kicks more field goals than the offense scores touchdowns for 4 out of 4. I'm going to jump on the bandwagon with you here because I love this one. I think it's weird, and I love how weird it is. It's a Phillip Rivers game. Chaos is guaranteed, so this feels like weird. But I think what you meant, and I'm going to adapt this and to become my own, I think what you meant is Dan Bailey scores more points than the offense does, because more field goals than the offense scores touchdown actually wouldn't be weird at all. Like, if the Vikings got 3 field goals and 2 touchdowns, like, that's a fairly normal thing to happen in a game. So I think you meant more points, which would be the bold thing. And if that is true, then I'm jumping on the bandwagon with you, and that's the one that I'm going to go with. I'm going to pick one of these every week to kind of go with or adapt to the way that I like. And the last one I'm going to read comes from Vikings Wales, who says there will be both a throwing TD and a rushing TD from the attacking team's own half, so like from behind the 50. And I like that it doesn't specify like who it's going to be. It could be Dalvin Cook housing one. It could be Jonathan Taylor housing one. It could be, you know, an Adam Thielen thing. It could be T.Y. Hilton from the slot beating up on Mike Hughes or whatever. Although T.Y. Hilton did not play the slot. He usually is a slot receiver, but the Colts use Paris Campbell there, so that's probably what it would be. But even that, like, I love that it doesn't specify. It's still like 2 touchdowns that are of greater than 50 yards of rushing and a passing is like specific enough to count as bold for me, but I like the sneaky vagueness of it that actually gives it a decent chance to catch. I like the strategy here. So those are the bold predictions that I chose to read. If you submitted one and I didn't read it, I apologize. I'll try to get to as many different people as possible over this, but keep sending me them. We're going to do this every week, and I think this is super, super fun, and if anybody actually gets one, I don't know, we'll find something to do with it. The only other thing that I really want to chat about real quick before I sign off for the week is Jeff Gladney. Of course, like I said, Cameron Dantzler probably not going to play. He could. Sometimes guys like have a Friday practice report rally. Maybe you already know about one as you're listening to this. But as far as this recording, he has not practiced Wednesday or Thursday most of the time, especially with a rib injury. That means the guy's not going to play, which is unfortunate. So we're going to kind of see the Jeff Gladney baptism by fire here. And it kind of follows the same thing where all the corners did really poorly. And the fact that the Vikings thought that those 3 guys were better than Jeff Gladney, and those 3 guys did that poorly, it's pretty unlikely that Jeff Gladney getting into that game more would have, like, fixed things, but I am excited to see him. Maybe he's not ready to play yet. I kind of thought he would come out of the box ready to play, but hey, maybe it just takes a little bit longer. You know, the COVID offseason is rough on rookies, and maybe Dantzler is the exception and not the rule, being able to start week 1 and look at least like he belongs on a football field. But that's going to kind of be, I think, one of the storylines going into this one is like Jeff Gladney's debut. He did play some snaps, but like his starting debut, his real debut, and how that holds up against a Colts wide receiver core that the Colts don't seem that high on. And honestly, I'm not that high on them either. So we're going to kind of have to see. I got the Vikings +3 on this one. I think they win outright, but I took the points because it's a Phillip Rivers game. And that's kind of my rule in terms of like gambling. But I would say that they win. I think the Vikings are going to win this game. I think if you want to be taken seriously as a playoff team, you got to beat a team as good as the Colts. I think the Colts are a below 500 team this year. I'm not very high on them, and you have to beat that. If you can't beat that, look like you're supposed to look as a playoff team against a 500 team, and that means winning the game. Even if it's an ugly game, go win the game. But that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings. I will see you all next week on the other side of this Colts matchup, and we will go through the whole thing again. We'll talk about this, we'll talk about the tape, we will talk to Locked On Titans next week for the preview. We'll do the whole thing, 5 days a week, baby. But I will see you then. Of course, this episode has been brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watching. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings, and I will see you all next week. And as always, Skull.